Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritaswellness.health. Right here on the program, live in studio, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and Morley Robbins here on the show as well today. Let me say good morning once again to both gentlemen. Good morning to both of you. Hope you all are having a wonderful Monday. Monday with Morley, but Morley in studio. Usually he's by phone, but he's in studio as well.
Welcome, Morley. Glad you're here today.
Thank you. Saw a beautiful sunrise over Lubbock today.
Awesome.
Nice.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
We do have beautiful fall sunrises, no doubt.
Yeah.
Thank you for delaying your first Monday for a week
to
be able to join us live in studio. Excited to have a conversation today about stress.
Is there any stress?
Raise your hand if you're not stressed.
Who's under stress?
Yeah. I had a sneaky feeling that if we delayed this a week, this would be a much more pertinent topic, this stress thing.
Right.
And how stress impacts your mitochondria, your energy production, your ability to clear the exhaust out of your cell. As our long-term listeners understand, I think by now, that's what all this boils down to. Your susceptibility to COVID and to chronic disease both boils down to the simple fact of, can you make energy and can you clear exhaust? And what are things that impede that or harm or hamper that from happening? Throw a monkey wrench into that. Stress being a big one. So we wanted to connect the dots today between stress, and that's a big term. There's lots of different stressors. You know, someone asked me about Lubbock's uptick in COVID lately with, you know, Michael Levitt out of Stanford coming out way back in the summer saying Texas will be done August 25th, which he was correct. I think it was the 28th. The increase over the average for expected deaths that we saw in the northern part of the country and in Europe, that was over in the spring, and then the southern parts of the country, it was later in the summer. So that excess death curve did come down, just as he stated. However, of course, viruses continue, all kinds of different viruses. I want to remind people that CDC data over the last 19 years, if you average it out, people who think they have the flu, the CDC swabs them and tests them, and only 15% actually have influenza. Mm-hmm. 85% have other flu-like viruses. And there's hundreds of other flu-like viruses. So currently right now, if you show up with respiratory symptoms, low oxygen levels, a cough, snotty, achy muscles, fever, most likely you're going to be called COVID, not influenza or any other virus. Mm-hmm. The testing's not real accurate. We know that the PCR test in particular, if you get over 35 cycles, it's useless. And I think the average cycle on the average test is 38. So it's a very inaccurate test. So, I mean, we can split hairs over these respiratory viruses, which ones are out there, which ones are more predominant. It's clear, totally clear if you look. And Ivor Cummings did another fantastic video a few days ago, so go check it out, where he talks about this data and the excess mortality not being any different than any other flu season. And so will we see increased respiratory admissions and ICUs and death in the winter? We do every winter, so yes, we will. You know, you listen to Zach Bush and Tom Cowan, they talk about stressors more from an environmental standpoint. Zach Bush talking about defoliation of the cotton crop, and then you get a sudden change in the carbon ratios in the atmosphere because you no longer have green plants growing, or when the first freeze hits and you get the trees and the grass suddenly stop growing, and that photosynthesis cycle and the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere locally and the impact that will have on the mitochondria. Tom Cowan, of course, talking about 5G and the impact of that on your mitochondria. All these are stressors. All these different things are stressors. And these viruses are always going to be around. Sometimes we'll have a little more death and sometimes a little less death. But again, this death curve is consistent with previous flu. So I'm not going to get into that. That's a dead horse. We've beaten enough. Go look at the old videos if you can find them. Censorship. It took them a month and a half, but the 2.1 million viewed Facebook video finally got taken down. And I think just about all my other ones have too. So you do have to seek and hunt and try to discern when you're hearing truth or not.
Should I be sitting here right now?
You might want to get out of the screen because we're live there. So, for those that have ears to hear, y'all can listen up today. We're going to talk about this stress thing. But before we jump into that, I did have a listener email the clinic with a question on last week's show. We had a gentleman give his testimonial. And to sum it up, he was a 74-year-old gentleman, walked into our clinic, looked like he was about to die, literally. He was pale as could be, almost disoriented, could barely stand up. His oxygen saturation levels in his blood were in the low 70s. Normally in a hospital setting, you'd immediately start oxygen via nasal cannula or mask, and if he didn't respond, you'd intubate him. And y'all can go listen to his testimony last week. So the point of last week's show was to try to help mitigate the fear by explaining there are rescue protocols, I'll call them. And these rescue protocols are designed to rescue you from dying in the next 5 minutes. That doesn't mean they're appropriate to do long-term or prophylactically for sure. So we need to distinguish that. So as a medical doctor, when you're presented with a patient dying basically in front of you, you have to pull out all the stops and use all you've got in your toolbox to use. Are there potential negative unintended consequences long term, especially if you stay on some of these treatments long term? Absolutely. You don't want to be on steroids long term. There's tons of detrimental side effects to steroids. And the same with other things. Obviously, ascorbic acid, vitamin D, and vitamin A. I will note this gentleman, I don't think we said it last week, he was on natural food-based versions of the vitamin C, the vitamin A, and the vitamin D. But he was on hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and steroid, and antibiotic azithromycin. And there are negative unintended consequences of being on that. So I don't endorse that as a protocol you would just jump to willy-nilly, or definitely not prophylactically or long-term using synthetic vitamins or pharmaceuticals. So wanted to make that distinction. And I'll end it with this. It's just like stents and bypass surgeries. You know, people are under the misconception that those save your life long term. Mm-hmm. The only time they'll save your life is if you're acutely having a heart attack right this minute. You're in the middle of a massive myocardial infarction and you show up at the ER and they take you straight to the cath lab and put in a stent. That will save your life. 99% of the stents, though, are put in just because you had chest pain when you were mowing the lawn, and you had chest pain when you're walking up the stairs, and you had chest pain when you brought in the groceries, and you go to the doctor, and you no longer have chest pain right this second, but you get on the treadmill, do a stress test, or do a angiogram, and it shows some blockage, and then they do a stent or a bypass. Those, the medical literature is clear, do not prevent future heart attack and stroke. Stents and bypasses prevent immediate death if you're in the middle of a heart attack right that minute. So that's a rescue therapy, putting a stent in the middle of a heart attack. But to do a stent in any other scenario, the literature is clear. It does not reduce your risk of future heart attacks. So we've got to get that clear in our minds. I'm a medical doctor who does use rescue medicine when I feel like it's needed. But the point of this show, and especially with Morley's First Mondays with Morley, is to connect all these dots through the scientific literature to try to prove to your intellectual mind that your body will defend itself and will function normally. It won't make coronary blockages, and it won't succumb to COVID-19, and it won't succumb to dementia and all these other things if you steward your terrain. Before the bomb goes off, before you're sitting there in the ER having an active heart attack. So let's get out of rescue medicine mindset. That's why American medicine is in such trouble. We ignore root causes. We wait for the bomb to go off, and then we throw the kitchen sink at it, and half of the kitchen sink actually kills you before, you know, the cure is worse than the disease. So we get horrible outcomes. Anyways, I got to stop talking because Morley's here today, and we need to talk about our main topic. But Morley, feel free to chime in. That I told the listener we would get your input too. So feel free to chime in on that, and then we can dive straight into the stress effects on the cell. And thank you for being here today. Appreciate your
delighted to be here.
Time.
Yeah. Always happy to be having a live chat with you face to face. To build on what you've just talked about, I think to set the stage. It's important to understand what stress is. And Mark Hyman, a noted functional physician at Cleveland Clinic, has, I think, the best definition of stress. Stress is the body's inability to make energy for the mind to respond to its environment. Very powerful series of connections there. And what is very important for the listeners to really understand, and this has taken me years of research and hundreds of conversations like we've had, as soon as we feel that knot in our stomach, that stress, we know what stress feels like. We are experiencing oxidative stress inside our body. And what that means is, what does the term oxidative stress mean? It means that oxygen is not being turned into energy, and the oxidants are not being cleared as exhaust. We've talked about that time and time again. But it's important for people to recognize that stress on the outside becomes oxidative stress on the inside, and it changes the physiology of the body like that instantly. And especially in bodies that are not in balance, especially in bodies that don't have enough bioavailable copper to regulate the two biggest stressors on the planet, oxygen and iron. Again, those are the... There's nothing bigger than oxygen and iron to cause stress for humans. And people just... We've never been sensitized to that. And, of course, we've had this conversation before. But even in the situation of that 74-year-old who presents with a crisis, clearly, what was taking over his body was oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely understand and respect the need for, as you call it, rescue therapy, because you got a crisis. You have just been empowered to try to, quote, save this person's life. And the analogy that I used in our email exchange around this is we live and we work in buildings with smoke alarms. We wouldn't even think about being in a building if it didn't have a smoke alarm. And it's like plays a very important role to warn us that there's a problem. And it turns out that we actually have a smoke alarm in our body. And it's a gene called hypoxia-inducible factor 1 alpha, HIF-1A. And it's one of the most powerful genes in the human body because it has influence over 2,500 other genes that are all directed at trying to increase oxygen burn rate and iron regulation. And in the same way that the smoke alarms in our home work best with a copper top battery, the smoke alarm in our body responds as soon as the body senses that copper's not where it needs to be, it triggers this response. Now why am I going into all this detail? Well, in a fire, if the smoke alarm doesn't work and people don't know that there's a fire, call in the fire department. That's rescue therapy. Mm-hmm. We gotta put the fire out. But there's another side to it, and that's the rebuild therapy. We gotta rebuild that building, that home, that office, or whatever it is. And I think what's important for the public to understand is that the same analogy holds in a medical crisis. There is a need for rescue therapy, but there is also a need for rebuild therapy. And the caution that I have for people is don't be misled by getting rescued. Now we got to rebuild the body. And I think the point that you're making is, why don't we take the steps to prevent the problem from the beginning? And what I think is one of the most fascinating articles I've seen in this last 6 months was a study by Dr. Perricone in Italy, you know, August of 2020. So it's 2 months old.
Come on, Morley.
It's ancient. I know.
48 hours is our cutoff right here. We will be late breaking news.
But what Dr. Perricone did, he only did one thing to save the patients via rescue therapy, and that was to do iron chelation therapy. And he lowered the level of iron in their body, and the vast majority of them did just fine. And so it's important for people to realize that behind this curtain of stress is oxidative stress. And what does that really mean? It means that oxygen's not being regulated and harnessed by copper, and iron is not being regulated and harnessed by copper. And it's like we live on a planet where copper is in charge of regulating the two most toxic elements on this planet. And that's not widely known or widely understood, but it's at the very focal point of the crisis.
Yeah. So we want to zero in on what disables that copper. What keeps that copper from regulating iron and oxygen? If it's not available, it's not around, it's not in the right form or whatever, what's up with the copper? And before we jump in, just to remind people, the iron, when you have this excess unbound iron that's not regulated, it disrupts the energy production and it disrupts the ability to deal with exhaust. So it's a double-edged, double whammy. Yeah. Iron's going to hit both sides of your equation, driving that stressful situation internally. So copper. If copper regulates both sides of this thing, the iron and the oxygen, what takes it out or what's up with copper? Why isn't it available to do its job?
How much time have you got?
Well, let me check. We're almost actually up against the break, aren't we, Wade?
Yeah,
should we answer that when we...
Yeah, no, you got about 10.
Oh, okay. Okay. Never mind.
All right.
We started a little bit late, so we'll go a little bit longer.
Okay, that's
right.
Gotcha.
All right, so here's... Again, we don't talk about a lot of minerals. We talk about three.
Yeah.
We talk about needing more magnesium, needing more bioavailable copper, and needing less iron. What we really need is we need iron to be more functional. And for iron to be more functional, the copper needs to be more bioavailable.
Yeah.
The body needs to be able to access it and actually use it. Yeah. So it's a pretty simple formula. So it turns out one of my... I've got some research heroes. Leslie Clave would be one of the great copper researchers. He's an MD, PhD, out of the University of North Dakota. Brilliant, brilliant guy. I had a chance to talk with him many times. Other research heroes would be, you know, Mildred Seelig or Burton Altura, who focus on magnesium. But one of my favorite researchers around magnesium is a Harvard-trained cardiologist named William Weglicki. And William Weglicki is brilliant. And back in the 90s, he wrote a very important... It was 1992. He wrote a very important article about how magnesium deficiency triggered the release of what's called Substance P. And for the folks out there that are equestrians, they know what Substance P is because it's a real big deal in the horse community. You don't want your horse expressing too much Substance P because they get really agitated. Well, it does the same thing in our body. So he connected the dots in a very compelling series of articles. And in the research world, they have the same kind of voting system like we have in social media. And he got 47 likes.
Mm.
Wow. 47 people gave him a thumbs up. This led to him being kicked out of Harvard, and he relocates at George Washington University to continue his research. And 10 years later, in 2002, his cardiology colleague, Peter Libby, wrote an article that talked about how cardiac disease is caused by inflammation. But he doesn't talk about magnesium. He doesn't talk about Substance P. But he just says, booga-wooga inflammation causes cardiac disease. How many likes do you think his research got?
5 million.
4,700 likes. So just, you know, a completely different order of response. And that's what the system wants, is keep it kind of fuzzy and keep it, you know, mysterious. But the bottom line is, Weglicki figured out what the problem was. But... that was back in 1992, and I just came across some research that he and his colleagues did in 2009, 10, and 11 that I hadn't been aware of. And it's absolutely fascinating that when we're under stress, the nutrients that get hit the first and the most are magnesium and B vitamins. They're water-soluble, and they go right into the toilet. Boom. as soon as we have a car accident, fight with someone, bad meal, whatever the source of the stress is, there's magnesium loss and B1 loss. Well, when magnesium is not available and there isn't sufficient storage in the bone marrow, that's where the bone bank is, you know, the bone marrow is holding these minerals. If there isn't sufficient magnesium in the diet, and if there isn't sufficient magnesium storage, there's a very important enzyme that doesn't get made, and it's called neutroendopeptidase, NEP. And if NEP doesn't express, substance P takes off like a rocket. When substance P takes off like a rocket, that then triggers activity in the hypothalamus that says, we got a problem, Houston, or Lubbock, or wherever we are in Texas. And so then that tells the adrenals, release the hounds. Release the cortisol. We got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across some additional research, which is absolutely fascinating. I wasn't aware of this. When cortisol, again, magnesium and cortisol are on a seesaw. When one is up, the other's down. As soon as magnesium goes down, cortisol is going to rise. Absolutely axiomatic. And what does cortisol do? It increases the synthesis of a protein called metallothionine. It increases it 4 to 5-fold. It's like, okay, why is that a problem? Because the metallothionine protein binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. Now, it's hard for us to relate to 1,000 times. Think of a friend of yours who's twice as strong as you, or someone who's 3 times as strong as you. They can lift 3 times as much weight. 1,000 times stronger? And that's the response to stress, especially chronic stress. If there isn't any resolution to the mind's perception of its environment, it just becomes more chronic, and there's this increased production of metallothionine. And suddenly, not only have we lost magnesium, we've lost copper. Well, what does that mean metabolically? Well, when we get inside the energy production of the cell, there's glycolysis, and then there's the electron transport chain. Well, glycolysis has 10 enzymes. 8 of them require magnesium. And what's supposed to happen in glycolysis is we're supposed to release these substances. They're called reducing equivalents. What that really means is they're able to release electrons. But they reduce electrons that then go into the electron transport chain, which is basically run by copper. So effectively, we have shut down our energy production because of stress. And what's very clear in the literature, and one of the few benefits of this 2020 is it inspired me to understand, how does the immune system really work? Well, it works on energy. B cells, T cells, macrophages all must have steady streams of energy. And what's very clear in the literature is once cortisol comes on the scene, guess what happens to B cells, T cells, and macrophages? It's like you put a blanket on them.
Yeah.
And it effectively has reduced the capacity to respond to whatever the threat is, whether it's a paper tiger or a real tiger, we lose the natural ability to adapt. And so I think what's important for the listeners to understand is that this response to stress is deeply conserved in our metabolism. And as you expressed, there may be 1,000 different forms of stress, but there's only one stress response. And that stress response was originally conceived of by Dr. Fiedler. He was a Viennese cardiologist who in 1899 figured it out. He said, when we're under stress, we have magnesium loss. When we have magnesium loss, there's electrolyte dysregulation. When there's electrolyte dysregulation, there's energy loss. When there's energy loss, there's cell death. When there's cell death, there's inflammation. And when there's inflammation, the body's conserved response is to patch up that mess with calcification. And he documented this in 1899. One response to stress, whether it's a car accident or worrying about COVID, same, the body responds the exact same way. Yeah. And what I found particularly intriguing, and I think what sparked this whole dialogue and what led to why don't we do this face-to-face, was connecting some research that Dr. Clave had done in 1990 about taking rodents and putting them under restraint stress, right, and what that did to their copper metabolism, which was devastating. And then a Dr. Chen in 2020, again, August, I'm sorry. I know it's still old.
We'll forgive you this time.
But they went through the same restraint stress, but this time they did it with humans. And it was devastating. And so just to amplify the point for the listeners, this mask is a restraint. It's a psychological restraint. It's a physical restraint. It's a spiritual restraint. And I think it's important for people to understand that we have spent the better part of 2020 in restraint, in a state of maybe subclinical cortisol crisis, not aware of the mineral burn rate, magnesium and copper, and that what we need to be really mindful of is the importance of, as you say, getting back to the root cause of the problem, making sure that we are tanked up, that we have the capacity, the reserves. And again, the nature of the body is always to ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. There's never going to be a point where there's quiet. There's always going to be stress. Just living on the planet is stressful. Yep. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. But under this heightened time of stress, it's very important for people to realize that there is a path, that the four pillars that you promote, that connect with the root cause protocol, presents a very compelling platform for people to instill some degree of sanity in their stressed out bodies.
Yeah. And that's the point, really, building that resiliency,
right,
filling all those tanks up, because there's going to be, we know, more to come from a stress and restraint point of view.
And what the research also says is that when we become magnesium deficient, this was probably the greatest contribution of Mildred Seelig and maybe Burton Altura and his wife, Bella. They only published 1,000 articles in their lifetime, which is unbelievable. But when an organism becomes magnesium deficient, it's like they're wearing night vision binoculars. Everything looks bigger and brighter than it really is.
Yeah.
And so the magnesium on the front end is really important to instill this chill factor, but also to keep this cortisol at bay.
Yeah.
And that's as important as making sure that we're getting the copper side addressed so that we can really significantly multiply the energy production through the electron transport chain.
Right. Okay, Morley, that's awesome, connecting all those dots like that. So basically stress drives magnesium down. It also causes your certain genes to turn on that will cause proteins to be made that gobble up your copper or make it binds up the copper, keeps it from being utilized. So in a nutshell, you just depleted your magnesium and copper reserves. They're not available for the cell to function properly, and you're into survival mechanisms. Your energy production is down, your exhaust is up, and you're in survival mode. So to help combat that, obviously come into that situation fully replete, fully with your bone bank full of magnesium and copper, your organs full of copper from a natural source. We'll talk about that more after the break. But bottom line, the mag and the copper are significantly impacted by stress. And I want to remind people from Bruce Lipton's work, stress is also, it's your interpretation of the stress. It's what goggles you're wearing. What beliefs, structure, systems do you have in your being that allow you to look into the world and interpret things a certain way? And maybe we'll replay that Bruce Lipton interview next week. But we're up against a break. When we come back, we'll dive even more into this. We're happy to take text or calls or Facebook questions. I think we have a couple for when we get back. Morley Robbins is with us today, everybody. RCP123.org is his website. He's also on social media. Go check out his page. Ben Edwards, you're the cure. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
And again, that number to text in, 806-745-5800, 745-5800, all right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM Lubbock. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM Lubbock, Texas. Dr. Ben Edwards, M.D., Morley Robbins along the way right here on the show. Check out the website, veritaswellness.health. You can go there and find out a lot of good information as well at veritaswellness.health. If you have a question along the way, you can always text it in here to the radio program at area code 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Let's go to the text line. The question says, because blood donation centers are testing all donors' blood for the COVID-19 antibodies, many of us are avoiding the melee. Is this a concern worth rising iron and saturation percentages as well as a result of missed blood donations? Help. Good question.
No, that's a great question.
My input is there's not very many things that should keep you from getting excess iron out of your body. So I would do it. I would donate.
And I would,
my opinion.
I agree. And I would add that there are two options that people have. With increasing prevalence, there are more and more phlebotomists working out of a mobile operation where you don't have to go to a center. They'll come to your home. So just Google mobile phlebotomy, Lubbock, or whatever your community is. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. There'll be people who pop up. The other is there's a supplement that you can get called apolactoferrin. I think Life Extension is the only, that's probably the best source. But it's apolactoferrin. That means empty lactoferrin. And it binds up iron. So that might be another enhancement to the protocol is to do that.
Morley, can't you also fast for an extended period of time and it also reduces iron levels in the blood?
Absolutely. It's an ancient form of iron regulation that what fasting does, and I think you had mentioned that it was like after 48 hours, and I think, Ben, you might have some information about this, but the body triggers what's called autophagy. And when autophagy, which is basically the recycling of cells, and when autophagy begins to take hold, it begins to release the iron, the excess iron. Now, what form, not sure I know, but it's a known fact that there is a lowering of the iron footprint in the body as a result of that.
That's good.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Yeah.
And it maxes out around in between the 48 and 72-hour window autophagy, I think.
Yeah.
Correct?
That sounds right.
Okay.
And when you're fasting, those ketones rise, which is beneficial. Dr. Mercola had an article out a couple days ago. I'm quoting from it. Ketones are water-soluble fats that aid in tissue healing. They are also very helpful in the cases of viral infections, such as COVID-19, as they reestablish cellular homeostasis, provide rapid energy, recharge your antioxidants, and control oxidation within the cell. Everything we just talked about in the first half of the show. And that's, again, ketones, which are these fatty particles you produce when you fast. So Wade was mentioning off air during the break about recovering or some lingering symptoms that he's had for a while now, but this fast really knocked him out. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, a lot of things are happening in the body when you fast like that, but this ketone production and then dropping that excess iron. And I think it's a good time to remind new listeners this iron thingy. Go back and listen to some old shows, but in a nutshell, they started fortifying our food with extra iron in the 1940s. So if you've been on a standard American type of diet with iron fortification coming into your mouth every single day like a bowl of Cheerios with 18 milligrams of iron in one cup of multigrain Cheerios, then your body was just saturated with iron. and still is, because there's no known excretory pathway or mechanism for the body to get rid of this excess iron. You can't, unless you bleed. So women with a monthly cycle will lose some, but not near enough to overcome the standard American diet consumption of extra iron. And now it turns out our 1940s knowledge was incomplete. Imagine that. even our 2020 knowledge is incomplete. Man's wisdom. Don't get me started on man's wisdom. But now we do at least understand that the iron in the body that's required for normal functions, most of that we grab from the recycling bin in our body. Right. So the red blood cells in particular that are constantly turning over, you make new red blood cells every day, and you need a lot of iron in a red blood cell. But 90% of that, you're going to grab it from the recycling bin. You don't need it dietarily. You only need about a milligram a day dietarily. Easy to get that. Iron fortification will give you way more than that. It will give you 20 or 40 or 50 milligrams a day, depending on how much iron fortified food you're eating. So that's why we talk about blood donations regularly. And the literature is clear that people who do donate regularly, long term, they have better health outcomes.
Just to build on that real quick, it's important for everyone to understand that when we need to recycle iron, it's one of the primal parts of our body. 95% of the iron we need every day comes from recycling. You can't do it without bioavailable copper. When we need to make energy, can't do it without bioavailable copper. The entire electron transport chain runs on the energy of copper.
Yeah.
Very, very important. And then the third point that Dr. McCullough is pointing out here is the antioxidant capacity is entirely dependent on bioavailable copper.
Yeah.
And those three key events are all interrelated. And what, just to emphasize the importance of this, how many new red blood cells do we need every second?
2.4 million.
Wow. 2.4 million red blood cells every second. I don't think people realize what the order of magnitude, all the handoffs that need to take place in order to support that.
Unbelievable. So magnesium, copper, B vitamins you mentioned, you burn through those under stress, B1 in particular.
Right.
We haven't really talked about retinol, which is vitamin A, natural form of vitamin A, but these are the key ingredients to combat this
that have been methodically taken out of the diet.
That have been taken out of the diet one by one.
Yeah.
And we've substituted in through man's wisdom things like ascorbic acid, synthetic vitamin D, and other things that will even more so take those offline. Not only are they just not in our diet, in our food, but now we're doing things that will even subvert it even more. And by the way, that is the core four that we talk about at Veritas, magnesium. Whole food vitamin C is one source of this bioavailable copper. There's other good things in whole food vitamin C, not ascorbic acid. So magnesium, whole food vitamin C, beef liver has a lot of nutrients. It's probably your best multivitamin if you want to think about multivitamins, organ meats. They have the B vitamins, but they also have the copper. And then cod liver oil has your retinol, which all, it has your natural vitamin A and vitamin D. Retinol is vitamin A. That's the core four. That's pretty much phase one of the root cause protocol, too, and then there's phase two and three also. But I'm just pointing that out, guys, to remind you. You need to be aware of these things, number one, then you need to go do something about it. It's one thing to have the knowledge, then you got to follow through. And I would love for the core four and the root cause protocol to not have to supplement.
Right.
In fact, we're working on a potential Veritas ag. Beef and agricultural community, whether it's Veritas doing it or others in the community banding together to produce these things on a massive scale for people until it's in their diet routinely. Because 100 years ago, 200 years ago, it was, Weston A. Price saw this, that it was in the diet of these native populations that were resistant to tuberculosis. And as soon as they brought in nutrient-depleted food of processed flour and sugar, all of a sudden they're dying of tuberculosis.
It's
that simple, guys.
It really is. In fact, it's too simple.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, but it's also the double-edged sword of it's hard to believe it. So another question.
Yeah, question on the text line. Again, you can always text in 806-745-5800. Is soaking in Epsom salt a good way to get your MgSO4? MgSO4.
Magnesium sulfate. Soaking in Epsom salt is one way to get magnesium in, and it's a great way to do it. Your skin is the biggest organ, so when you apply stuff to the skin, and this, again, goes both ways. You apply bad stuff's coming in. So watch what you're putting on your skin, guys. The average woman walks out of their house in the morning just having applied 126 different chemicals to her body, on her skin, on her hair, her underarms, everywhere, her mouth, through mouthwash and toothpaste. That was an environmental working group study from a number of years ago. So be careful there. So Epsom salt baths are great. I recommend them. I know Morley does too. But you can do topical lotions of magnesium. Also, Ancient Minerals has a great one. So
and why? Oh, another text. Why is sodium ascorbate bad? That's going to be to Morley.
Why me? What is, he gets the softball question about Epsom salt. And
I'll answer that one real fast. God's wisdom versus man's wisdom. We think we can carve out one little piece of this amazing creation of a molecule that's multi-dimensional complex. We're going to carve out and make a synthetic version of one little aspect of that.
No way.
I don't need to know the thousands of articles that would support the next statement. I can just tell you, I know in my being, this is one of those belief systems I'm talking about. You cannot improve on God. You cannot improve on the original design. So you want to carve out just the sodium ascorbate only. There's going to be unintended consequences of doing that, but that's my little pitch.
I have 15, and I'm sure there are others, but I have 15 different researchers from 1948 to 2015 who have clearly documented that ascorbic acid and ascorbate kill the ceruloplasmin protein. What does that mean? It means copper is no longer being regulated and it's no longer bioavailable. Why didn't Linus Pauling talk about this, or why didn't Albert Svendgaardi? That would take us 2 hours just to talk about that alone. But the point that Dr. Ben is making is the real vitamin C is like our car, where it has an engine, a steering wheel, four wheels, and a cover. Ascorbic acid, that's the real vitamin C molecule. Ascorbic acid is the cover of the car and no moving parts. And what people need to understand is that why do we keep emphasizing grass-fed beef liver? Because the copper in the soil goes into the grass and becomes vitamin C. And the animal eats the grass, so that tyrosinase, that's the engine of vitamin C. It's called tyrosinase, an incredibly important and incredibly powerful enzyme. We wouldn't be on this planet without it. And that delivers copper where it's needed, so that the liver in that animal begins to fill up properly with copper, so it can regulate oxygen and iron. The system is very beautifully designed. It's just all of these truths have been hidden over the last 10 decades. Just it's been a sea of deception and just uncertainty. It's very clear in the research what's going on.
Yeah, and that's why we have Chad Wall and others come on talking about regenerative agriculture, because you want that soil to be properly managed so that grass does have the optimal amounts of these minerals. And then the cow does, and its liver does, and we eat that. So that's the future, is you're getting beef liver from a certified regenerative agriculture farm that they've proven there's copper in the liver of that cow. Because you sent me a study not too long ago that showed cows totally deficient in this copper.
Exactly.
So we're all choking down these beef liver pills or eating deliciously prepared liver if you have a great chef in your home.
Right.
But if the cow doesn't have it, because the grass didn't have it, because we mismanaged that land.
And then one of my students is a small grain farm in California, and he wins awards with his barley and radish. I said, dude, how do you do it? He said, do you really want to know? I said, yeah. He said, I spray the soil with copper sulfate every year before I put the seeds in. He said, apparently my fellow farmers don't know about that. So it's a very simple technique. And just to build on one other point that we were talking about earlier, we were talking about the fire alarm in our body, the hypoxia-inducible factor fire alarm. What is that really trying to do? It's trying to reset the metabolism so we can burn oxygen and regulate iron. Because the body knows this is not a sustainable model. Well, everyone knows about their thyroid, and they think that the thyroid runs the body. That's not how it works. It turns out that T3, the active form of the hormone, it's an oxygen sensor that hangs out in complex 4 of the mitochondria. And it's, are we burning? Are we burning the oxygen okay? Mm. And if we don't burn it okay, it sends a signal to that gene, hypoxia-inducible factor. And what do all hormones do? They send a signal. Mm-hmm. And the signal that T3 sends is, we need more ceruloplasmin because we need more bioavailable copper so we can burn the oxygen and regulate the iron. Mm. And that's the compelling research of Jens Maytag in Germany from 2012. And then I stumbled upon an article, 2019, December. I know.
You're going to have to up your game, Mona. Come on.
I know. But it was a study in Romania using turmeric and some other natural herbs to pump up the thyroid function, because guess what the thyroid is? It's copper dependent. And they know that in Eastern Europe, but apparently that hasn't traveled west. It's an amazing study.
What about another text here says, so food-based vitamin C is non-acidic, yes or no? Food-based vitamin C.
Well, you're going to have citric acid in lemons and oranges and grapefruits and things like that. But again, we're back to the wisdom of our maker and Mother Nature. It's done in a very specific way to be bioavailable. What Dr. Ben was talking about was this process of isolating one component, the cover of the vitamin C complex, and saying, well, let's ascribe all of the properties to that. What's the first thing the ascorbate does inside the body? It grabs copper. It's the very first thing it does. That's not your friend.
So you wouldn't recommend, for example, I'm just as an example, like when I order a water at a restaurant, I always like to have a lemon wedge with it and squeeze it in.
I do too.
Is that good or
that's
bad?
That's very good.
That's a good thing.
Whole food vitamin
that's
C.
That's a good thing.
That's
right?
A very good thing.
Just making sure I'm clear on that.
And then get you some peppers.
Yep.
The salsa.
Yeah.
I mean, authentic food has great ingredients typically, but it's the flip side is we use this enriched white flour for the tortillas instead of ancient grains and
processed meats. The study that I came upon this morning, which is fascinating, 2020, I might add. Trying to up my game.
We'll let you proceed. Come on. Bring it.
It was an article that was researching transport stress of animals. Mm. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating about what they go through. So what we've been talking about for the last hour about humans applies to animals too. And so you think when they're being transported, what, average is 1,500 miles or whatever the distance is now, that's very disruptive to their homeostasis.
Yeah.
And that starts to change their chemistry and their hormones and their mineral status. Mm. And we don't even think about that. And that's why it's like to be here in Lubbock and to know you've got local manufacturers that make cow beef. Or
we're going to transform Lubbock into the hub of health.
That's awesome.
That's a new motto.
That's
the hub of health, Lubbock, Texas, because we've got so much ability to regenerate the land. When you regenerate this land and you have roots growing all year long, we could sequester all the carbon emitted since the Industrial Revolution began in a few years, per Joel Salatin and many others, just by keeping active roots in the ground all the time instead of open, bare soil.
Exactly.
But we have so much soil, so much opportunity to turn the open dirt, back into soil through these roots. And you do it with a cow. You do it with these ruminant animals.
That's
and they will regenerate this land and in the process regenerate us through our consumption of these high-quality, local, grass-fed, grass-raised, finished here locally animals. It will restore the land, restore our environment, restore our health, and I dare say restore some peace and sanity.
Absolutely.
By getting out to the farm and interacting with nature, getting grounded, get some sunshine,
being creation. It's so much opportunity here.
So I have one more quick question about on that same line. If I'm doing, a 24 or 48-hour fast, water fast only, would it be helpful for me to add some organic lime or lemons juice in my water as I drink that?
We'll call that Wade water.
Okay,
that's good.
There you go. And throw some sea salt into that.
Like some Himalayan pink salt.
When you go into a ketotic state, in a fasting state, you burn through and you utilize minerals at a lot higher rate. So get your salt going for sure.
So Himalayan pink salt added with some lemon or lime in that water that I'm drinking while fasting.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
And that's basically the adrenal cocktail in phase one.
Really?
The adrenal cocktail is your sea salt. And the vitamin C, because it's providing that copper. And you throw a little extra potassium in there.
All we do is just dust off Mother Nature.
That's amazing. I'm going to start doing that.
And then, and what people notice when they start to do the root cause protocol, they have this consistent rise in energy level, especially when they start to take the beef liver. Beef liver just has this, again, it's so nutrient dense, but it just has this elevating effect in the metabolism. It's very, and there's, just to amplify the point, what is the very first step of all chronic disease? Energy loss. Every condition starts with a loss of energy. So let's re-engineer that and start to make more energy.
It's all about making energy and clearing exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any more questions, Wade?
Yeah, another text here. I try to do all the right things in regard to my body, but lately I'm struggling again with fatigue and so on. Most say a fast is a good way to reset and cleanse, but I struggle with fasting. Can one drink herbal teas and such to get through a fast? What about all the natural smoothies?
I mean, you've got to listen to your body. Everyone's unique and individual, but if you feel like you have trouble fasting, in my experience, it's almost always minerals. You don't have enough mineral as a baseline, but even specifically that day, you're burning through them. So I would definitely up your sea salt intake specifically on your fasting days. But you may need to just spend some time remineralizing across the board through the root cause protocol before you jump into the fasting, possibly.
And what I would add to that is that invariably when people have fatigue issues like that, There's usually some unresolved emotional dynamic. They're not at peace. They need to address that. That is as important as anything else, because where there's lack of peace, or another way of saying it, where there's fear,
stress
is going to attract iron, and that iron is going to lower energy production. So they've got to address the emotional side as well as the nutritional side.
Yeah, and I was going to say the same thing. I have people tell me they're doing all the right things in the physical. They're eating right. They're taking the supplements. They're trying hard, but something's just not clicking. And oftentimes it will be the goggles that they're wearing. They're looking at the world through a set of goggles. It is just triggering the fear response.
Right.
You can eat all the beef liver you want and get all the bioavailable copper you want, but as we've talked about, that bioavailable copper becomes unavailable. It's in your body. You just ate a whole truckload of liver the past 6 months, so it's in there, but it got taken offline. It's not available. That's why Morley consistently says bioavailable copper. It's about the availability of these nutrients, and when you are under a stress response, they're not available. That ceruloplasm we've mentioned, that's the Swiss Army knife. All of a sudden, it just got closed up. That copper's still inside that Swiss Army knife somewhere, but it's not available to function and to be used. So we've got to address the goggles, address your beliefs, your thoughts that you have, especially in this day and age with what we're walking through right now. We have to understand who we are, why we're here, what our purpose is, and that there is a deeper and higher power to all of this. You know, God's sovereign. He's in charge. And yes, evil exists, but it will be overcome.
One quick question, and then we'll wrap up this morning. Another one on the text line that says, Morley, where can I find the root cause protocol? I'm from Wisconsin. Is it specific to your clinic?
My clinic is the world. But the root cause protocol is on a website, rcp123.org. And when you donate your email address, which we honor and protect, you will then get access to a 32-page document that lays out all of the components of the root cause protocol, the phasing that Dr. Ben is talking about, the rationale, and then you get access to a lot of information. There's 80 articles that I've written about iron toxicity. We've got links back to the conversations that Dr. Ben and I have had, along with I've got about 15 other personalities that I talk with, none as entertaining or as enlightened as Dr. Ben. I might
you
regret saying
say that since you're here live.
Sorry, that was an obligatory. No, but
we need more than 15. We need 1,500, 15,000, 15 million. We need this to get
right.
out.
So. Absolutely, but the point is, there's access to a lot of information there, and then as you noted, there's social media. There's two Facebook communities. There's one called the Magnesium Advocacy Group, and then there's the Root Cause Protocol page. So one is a group and one is a page. Don't ask me why we have that. It's just we're trying to increase our numbers. And we've got almost 200,000 in the group, and we've got about 50,000 in the page. So we're just continuing to grow the community. And it's a day-by-day opportunity.
And we archive all these shows, these first Mondays with Morley, on veritasmedical.com. There's a tab, resource tab, I believe it is, and you can scroll down to radio shows, and then there's a subcategory that's Morley's shows, and we put them all there so you can go through and get more than probably your heart could desire.
it's about 30 hours of blah, blah, blah now.
Yeah. And then we just launched VeritasWellness.health is simply a platform to hook up with wellness navigators at Veritas who can teach you how to cook beef liver and these these other things, these other diet lifestyle
things. Now you've
things.
Got the edge on me. I've got to work.
VeritasWellness.health is the four-week class to help initiate your turn into a more ancestral diet lifestyle. There you go. And so VeritasMedical.com is the radio show archives. VeritasWellness.health is the classes. RCP123.org is the root cause protocol. Morley, thank you.
Thank you very
Until
much.
Until next time.
You
Wade, bet. Thank you for being a platform to talk uncensored.
Absolutely. That's the way we like it here at AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Been listening to You're the Cure. And stick around. We'll be right back with more. And, of course, always check it out every Monday right here on the radio and Facebook Live.